Welcome into the hours. I am Mark, and I am joined by my good friend Claire, and I was paying Claire a big compliment last week. We're working with Collegiate Athletic Department, and it was our first meeting, and we were just kind of doing an introduction of the team, and Claire was not on this meeting, although she will be on some in the future and leading sessions for us. And my compliment, Claire, to you was you were one of the best connectors that I've ever been around. And I say this because of your role with Savvy is we often refer to you as a bridge. You connect all of the pieces with Savvy, but lately you have been doing way more basketball. And I am really excited about that because you have a tremendous amount of knowledge and insight that you can share with our community. And you've been investing a lot in our free community. If you're not a part of our free community, I suggest you go to savvyfree.com and do so. You can get all your questions answered in coaching from all the Savvy coaches and team. So Claire is a great connector for Savvy, but she's also a great connector of people. Claire, I'll give you a chance to say hello to the people, and then we'll dive into the big question, and I'll talk about your connection with people here in a second.
Hey, hello to the people. I'm glad the bridge status is shining through, Mark. I know you know this, but we have our identity statements at Savvy, and that is literally my identity statement. It is what I feel like is my purpose, my calling, my gift. I got a tattoo of it last month of a bridge, so maybe that's really giving the extra oomph. It's dotted into my skin. And so I'm living out that piece, just trying to help people get to where they need to go, support them along the way.
Nice. Well, you are like the glue person for Savvy. And I think every good team needs a glue guy or girl that just keeps everything together. And their value is, what they do for the team is way more valuable than what like an untrained eye would see. I said you were a connector of people. And I feel like this is a good big question for you to answer. It's one that's come up recently with coaches as we're kind of getting into the part of the season that the heat is on. We're in conference play. We're in district play. Stakes are higher. How do you balance accountability and encouragement in your program, whether that's at practice or games? Oftentimes coaches can struggle with that where we're either like too passive or too like over the top. Where it's all accountability and no encouragement. So Claire, you're the head coach, you're running a practice, you're running a program. How would you balance those two things?
Encouragement and accountability. It's the same thing, right? That's the ideal. It would be my answer is the closer you can get your encouragement and your accountability to be, the more likely or the more effective it's going to be. Of course, I know that isn't ideal. Sometimes accountability does not feel like encouragement, and encouragement doesn't always hold people accountable. So to balance that out, I'd say it has to be clear early and often. Like these conversations aren't something that you can just have at any given point. They should be being had at every given point. So if you want to hold your team accountable, or where we're seeing it now coming up at the end of season, not that it's too late, but it is going to be more difficult if you did not set that standard early in the season and continue to have those conversations of, I believe in you, I'm encouraging you, but also this is how we do things here. This is the expectation. So clear early and often is going to set you up for success in that, in any situation. And then the ongoing part is really more about the relationships. I know a lot of our Savvy coaches, they come for the systems, they stay for the community, or they come for the systems and they stay for the standards or the culture. And that piece is essential. That's basically the encouragement part of it, is making those deposits, talking to them outside of basketball. Can you encourage them in life and on the court so that those deposits kind of ease and give a buffer to the more harsh, the more direct, the more needed accountability side of them, if you're really kind of putting those two on a binary and separating them? So clear early often, make deposits into the relationship so that you have the credibility to hold someone accountable. Like some of our coaches, I cannot hold them accountable. I've never spoken to them before. Mark has a relationship with them. if you tell them they need to do something at practice, they will. Whereas coming from me with no deposits into my credibility or our relationship, not going to hold the same weight. Whereas I can encourage them, and then building that would probably allow me to hold them accountable a little bit more. Other than that, I think there's two more quick pieces I'll add. One would be reading the room and understanding both are needed. I think most of our coaches get that you can't just have fun and you can't just, you know, deal with this as a business and just be trying to get wins. There needs to be space to read the room. At times, people need grace. At times, they need a day off. We do, the players do, everyone does. So just being observant, and the relationships is going to build into that of, oh, this player's off today. Do we need to just have a one-on-one conversation before I get on them a bit extra? Or do they need me to get on them a little bit extra? So it is playing that line, which the relationships help with, and then reading the room to give space for that. Like, hey, it's okay. We're not going to get better at anything today, but we're going to get rested and come back better tomorrow. And then final is language. So the framing makes all the difference. Do all of those previous things, it's still going to matter how you say what you're trying to say, whether that is an encouragement or an accountability piece, even more so on the latter side. I know a big conversation that we've been having in both communities, free, paid, with our members, is what do we do with players that only have one read? So one read players, they can only hunt nines. They can only hunt sevens. They're limited maybe in their skill, but you need them to play, right? It would be nice to have a bunch of players that are super skilled and just have all the reads, but these players that aren't where we want them to be yet, they feel that, and they need to be held to a standard of, man, you can't get outside of your zone. You can't get outside of your scope. It negatively affects the rest of the team and how we execute things. But we still need you to make your read. So that's just one example. Check out our thread on that in the community. It's great. Coaches are popping in what they've done, what conversations they've had, the language that they've used. But that is a great opportunity to empower players of, we need you to hunt that nine. The read that you are making is so important. It's not that because you have less reads, you're less important. Your read is just as important. You're just not there yet. That takes a relief off of some of them. We've had that feedback from coaches where players were thrilled to have one read. Like, their job is clear, and clarity leads to high performance. Whereas if they want to level up, that language, that framing of empowerment and encouragement, while also holding them accountable to like the read that they're allowed to do, then give space to, okay, well, this is your next step to get to the next level. So that was a lot. I'm fired up about it. It's very important, but communicate it early, often, all the way through the season, deposit early, read the room, frame it in a positive way, and I think your players will be on board.
Yeah, so much of what you said is like exactly where my mind went. And it's funny, it's kind of been the story of my journey with Savvy. Is I feel like you, Tyler, and myself are so aligned, but we communicate things in a little different way. But the message is all the same. Like, I just took a couple notes while you were talking. Like reading the room, I always say, be the coach your team needs you to be. You even said like there might be some practices where like we can't just have our thumb on them every single day for every single second, because no one wants to operate like that. I also think the encouragement, accountability, the balance there, like you're talking about the relationship and getting to know the player and making those deposits. I always say deep care, high standards. And I really, really care about you. So I'm holding you to a really high standard. And I'm doing that for you because you're capable of doing more, right? And it also goes back, and I think you touched on this too, is like, hey, we're in this for more than just winning basketball games. Winning games is going to be a byproduct of the high standards that we hold ourselves to and the systems that we create. But it's not the ultimate purpose. If it is, then I think we lean way too far on the side of like, just keep your thumb on them, hold them accountable, don't let them get away with anything. And we really lack the encouragement. And I think that goes to like, if a coach is in it, and I wouldn't even say for the wrong reasons, you know, I think I would say most beginner coaches get into coaching because they love the game and they want to win, right? And then I think you quickly find out that, like, wait, there's way more to this thing. Like, I'm dealing with humans and they have emotions and they are, you know, they need basketball as much as we need them to play basketball. And we want our program to do as much for them as they will do for us with their basketball talent. So all of those things being said is like, if I'm going to be the coach that my team needs me to be, I can't show up to practice or a game and expect it to be perfect. We have really high standards, but we don't just expect those things to happen. As a coach, it's your job to get your team to the standard. And sometimes it just takes encouragement. Other times it takes accountability. And like you said, those two things really should blend together. You talked about framing, like how you say something is so important. Feedback that I would get from my team, and this is not good feedback. Well, the feedback I got was that I was impatient. And sometimes I was just trying to teach or illustrate or point something out, but my tone came off as like, I was being I'm frustrated right now, but it was really like just more of an urgency thing. So that was just like a learning and something I had to be aware of and change my tone, make sure I smiled when I said something. That way, if I say like, hey, Claire, it's not like, oh no, what did I do? It's like, hey, Claire, like that was awesome. Like great blockout or whatever it was. But also, I think a coaching superpower where you can hold players accountable and it not get demeaning or confrontational or attacking is just give notifications. Like, hey, Claire, I noticed you're not in a stance defensively, you know? So I think all of those things, really, really important. I think you touched on a lot of those as well. And then the last thing I will share with coaches is that your culture is revealed under stress. If this is a stressful time, the stakes are higher, games are bigger, maybe buy-in isn't as high with the players that aren't playing as much, like your one-read players might feel undervalued, all those things. Like if you go to a place of lack of patience, too much accountability, or just like kind of ruling with an iron fist, right? Like you go to like the frustrated coach, I can't handle my emotions. Like that is your culture. You can't just measure culture when things are really, really good. When you're tested, your culture will be revealed. And you can't, we say this all the time on the podcast, like you can't give away what you don't possess. So if your values are hard work, unity, selflessness, energy, excellence, whatever your values are, if you don't exhibit those when times are tough, when you need to hold players accountable, because there's a way to do that without going like monster mode on players, then that's an area of growth for you as the coach. Because if you don't possess it, you can't give it away. And if you don't have fun, if you can't find the good in what you're already doing, your players will really lack that too. And I think it'll feel like a more transactional culture.
Yeah, agreed. Same page. So good. So important.
Hey, everybody, this is Tyler, and I'd like to personally invite you to join our free Savvy Coaching community. Post any question you have here in our chat and get your questions answered, as well as get access to all of our free resources in our Savvy community. We've got it all here for you. So click the link below and we'll see you inside.
Let's dive into mailbag here. I'll ask myself the first question. And this one came in about running offense, race, and space. So one of our coaches in our paid community asked, he wants to start expanding his offense a little bit. Thinks he's at the point where they're playing conference teams again, and we can add and tweak. And he's got three players that he wants to really highlight. And he's asking, is he overthinking things by potentially putting in some sets for a specific player? And, you know, when do we call sets? I tried to limit myself to dead balls. 30% of the game is going to be played from a dead ball. I think that gives you plenty of opportunities to intervene and joystick. And so that is the governor that I put on myself. But like anything, there's always exceptions to the rule. So my exceptions to the rule would be if I needed to decide who and where from. Maybe I didn't like our shot selection. If we were not getting nines and sevens, if we were taking poor shots, or we just had empty possessions in general, like low execution, and I just feel like I need to give my team something to help them out, then absolutely you can make a call. In fact, in our paid community, we had a just kind of an impromptu consulting session where I just hopped on Google Meet and said, hey, any paid member of Savvy, hop on, let's talk. And one of our members asked that question. She was saying, my team is struggling to execute, but I don't want to be the joystick coach. Is it okay for me to call some things? I'm like, absolutely. Like, that is your job, right? Like, you are the bumpers at the bowling alley to keep them on track. If they're ever getting too far off, just give them a quick call. And then last thing I'll say, when I say call a set, a lot of times it was just an action within our offense where I knew the execution level was going to be very high. I knew it was going to fit our philosophy because it's part of our core offense, and we wouldn't have to, like, quote unquote, set up something and run this like intricate 5-player action to get a shot. It was still, let's do what we do. I'm just going to joystick what action I want to see and for who.
No, that's well said. I think that I saw another conversation in the community where it was about end of season adjustments. And I think that's similar, right? Is, yeah, you want to put in some tweaks, some change ups, want to have something in your back pocket, but is it related to what you do? And it really depends on your team. You know, how much have they learned so far? How much have you implemented? How crucial is it to your next game or end of season? I know Tyler spoke to that a couple weeks ago of, well, is this going to make or break your season? If it gets you through to the next game and is slightly something that you wouldn't usually do, okay, well, let's try it out. If it's still in line with your principles, if it teaches your players a new skill that you're going to use again later, awesome. Absolutely put that in, you know, hone your coaching skills, teach them something else about learning sets, and then get back to what you need to get back to. Whereas if you're just doing it to do it and adding all these things that are unrelated or counter to what you usually do, what you believe in, your standards, your principles that your offense, your defense are based out of, then all right, let's check our ego and maybe just like go drop some plays on your own and have some fun, play 2K. But yeah, if it's within your system, rock it, expand.
Yeah, I have found too, and I guess where I'd caution coaches is like, don't call something just because you haven't called something in a while, or don't call something just because like you feel like that's coaching. The majority of your coaching should be done in practice. And then when games come, that should be very much player led. And again, you're there to be the guardrails. You're there to nudge them along the right path. But I have found coaches, I was even watching basketball last night. And it was a college game. It was a high major game. And I was just watching the coaches, and not like from a critical standpoint, I think it's just probably a habit of theirs, but like every time they scored, they would have to like make all these hand motions and like, get back. I'm like, man, I'm like, your team doesn't know to get back on defense without you yelling, get back on defense. You know what I mean? Like, it just, to me, it just seems silly. Like, it's almost like they're playing coach. Like, this is what a coach would do in this situation. Let me do it. And again, not being critical, I really think it's the norm in coaching is like, they just always feel the need to be saying something or doing something. And I got to a place where I was pretty comfortable not doing something unless I needed to do something.
Yeah, leave some room to breathe. We love breathing.
Exactly. Yeah, and I would argue that if you didn't yell get back or defense, that your team would probably know that they were going from offense to defense.
If not, room to grow. There's your opportunity.
That's right. If not, we know what to practice in the next training session. Okay, here's a lock left question for you, Claire. As I know, you are an expert in lock left more so than I am. I think there's a deeper learning here. So one of our paid members asked about transition roles in lock left defense, which we have specific roles just to provide clarity and keep players in their desired role, right? What they do best. Can we keep them in that situation more so than not? And the question is, what if teams aren't running on us? Like, what if they're just walking the ball up? Should we maintain our transition roles, or should we just allow them to match up with our best matchup on the floor? What do you think?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I think at that point you can extend. Like, if they're really my initial reaction to a team walking it up would be like, great, now we have an opportunity to work on our red, on our press, getting aggressive and playing offense on defense. I'd be so excited about that opportunity to extend our lock left into the full court and speed them up because they clearly don't want to. So in that scenario, yes, stick with your transition roles, get that wolf up on the ball handler early, get your sniper, your gap, like up there so that we are speeding them into jail and dictating what they are doing, being the aggressor. Now, if you're more in the beginning stages and maybe your skill, especially of the wolf, the person picking up the ball, is not quite there yet, then stay in your green, stay back. But I think if you want to use this against so many other teams, so many other scenarios, changing it up for this one game is not going to make that much of a difference and not really worth getting out of those roles. If you were just going to, say, play the lock left that I grew up with, where there were not transition roles, we just match up traditionally man-to-man and lock left, then sure, run lock left the way you want to run it, match up in man, force them to jail. That absolutely works and is a system that many teams run. But if you are truly embracing the speed and the clarity and the roles of our default savvy lock left, then stick to your guns, get better at it, use it as an opportunity to increase your matchups, get them earlier, communicate, and then see where you need to switch from there to get matched up how you want in the half court. So multiple scenarios, always a yes and.
Man, I don't know that I have anything to really, I don't have too much to add. I will add one thing, and it's really more of a teaching thing off of what you said, because you took a different approach. Like, my mind went to the latter approach of like, hey, the goal of transition defense is to stop transition offense. If they're not trying to score in transition offense, then by all means, just get matched up. Like, that's really, really simple. You know, like, part of the transition defense system or principle is get the ball, get the basket, get the most dangerous people in the ball side, and then, you know, get matched up. Well, we could probably skip all the ball wall and just go straight to matching up if they're walking it up. But I actually love your teaching of what a great opportunity to go red, because, and this is really what I wanted to add to, is this is what savvy is all about, is like training your lens as a coach to say, okay, they're walking the ball up, but we want to speed the game up and we want to race in space and we want the game to look like a ping pong match. So this is an opportunity to go red, and we know that they're going to be uncomfortable with that because they want to walk it up and we want to play up and down, to where now the game's going to feel like the way we practice. They're going to be playing the savvy system, whether they know it or not. So that is what savvy's all about, is like training coaches to develop a lens and an approach to how they coach, whether it's in practice or games. So masterful job there. All right, let's do one from the free community. And this was an interesting one that, you know, Claire has really dove into the free community. We also have Frank, who is a moderator in our free community, and they are doing 99% of the answers in our free community, because Tyler and I, along with Claire and Frank, but we spend most of our time in our paid community. But this is one in the free community that I did not get to, but I thought would be interesting. And this is from a coach that is a varsity coach, was a JV coach. And when he was a JV coach, he did a lot of in-game coaching. He was drawing up plays, and he's been an assistant at the varsity level lately. So he hasn't been able to do that. And he feels like he's losing that skill to draw up plays. He was just asking for tips on how to draw up plays in a timeout. I'll go first on this one, because I have a couple of thoughts. I always really loved coaching special situations, and I feel like a strength of ours unintentionally was, like, we had our go-to, our bread and butter stuff that we knew was our crunch time plays. Whether it was like baseline out of bounds, I like running everything out of one or two series of action. So we might have like a box alignment where we run three or four plays. We might have a diamond alignment where we run three or four plays. And one of those plays is like, this is our late clock play. This is our special one. And we know it. We can run it at any point. It doesn't have to be end of game situation. It's just need a bucket play where we don't really have to draw those up because it's part of what we do. And we did the same from side out of bounds and full court out of bounds as well. So my first recommendation was like, if we're drawing something up, I like it to be more reminder based of, hey, Claire, remember when we run this, set this screen here, or be really patient when you're getting your screen, not what you're going to do. Because what's really difficult about that, we can draw it on the whiteboard, but what's difficult is the timing of it. to do it. You know, like it's very hard to get the timing when you're writing it all, because you can only write one thing at once. So very difficult to execute something that you've never practiced, because they don't have any context to relate that to. If they're plays that you already run, which they should be, I would print them out ahead of time. And another pro tip would be have everybody like on the diagram, them, the number, and their action, maybe it's a screen or a cut, have those in different colors. So Claire's job is going to be in green. Mine's going to be in blue. Tyler's is going to be in purple, just so it's really easy. And you can say, hey, Claire, you're green. Mark, you're blue. Tyler, you're purple. And I think they just see it better. But also having those printed out, it kind of is a cheat code to like, you can't mess it up, because as coaches, we feel the pressure too. We get, you know, rattled or emotional in the moment, and just a good guardrail to give yourself.
Man, that's so good. So you're saying to be good at drawing up plays, you need a color printer.
That's right.
That's essential take.
Pro, that's it. That's the cheat code.
Yeah, I like it. No, that actually takes what I was going to say to the next level. Controversial hot take: in games is not when you should be drawing up a play. If you want to draw up plays in games, if you are going to do that, of course that's going to happen. It needs to happen at a different time, whether that is literally you have some to go to that are printed out. I think that is fantastic. It means your players are comfortable with it. It, from the teaching aspect, speaks to or helps different types of learners who need the color. Maybe if you have a colorblind player, a little bit different, but there should still be the numbers. That clarity and that preparation is huge. But the best coaches that I've been around just dream and get creative outside of practice. It's whether it's your role as an assistant coach or not, if you enjoy that or you want to hone that skill, you should be doing it anyways. At home, getting curious, what is the situation? I'm going to make up. It's 8 minutes left in the game. We're down by 20. It's 2 minutes left in the game. We're up by 10. Like every situation you can think of, just spend 30 minutes. What would I draw up in this situation? Then you're going to feel confident when your head coach does empower you, or when you ask to maybe take on that role in a certain sense, like, can I have these timeouts, or I have a great play for this situation. You're prepared and you're just excited about something that you've really thought through outside of the stress and constraint in time of that situation.
Yeah, I like the thinking about it outside of practice too, because, or outside of the games, because you're like not emotionally attached to anything in the moment. And I would also say this: if you're not practicing special situations in practice, like every single day, I would suggest starting, because your players need this, but also you need this as well to know, like, okay, we have this play, but you know what? Like right now, I'm not comfortable calling that play. Like you need that feedback to know, because how many times is the first time you've done something the best time you've ever done it? Well, a lot of times we're not practicing these special situations in practice. It's going to be the first time you've run this play in this situation, or we might have to make a tweak. Like, hey, usually this is, you know, for a 2-pointer, but let's tweak this for a 3-pointer because of the situation. I would start practicing special situations every single day. And I know you're not doing it. There hasn't been one coach that I've talked to that says they do it every day or they do it enough. So if you're listening and you've listened this far, if you only take one thing away from the podcast, start doing special situations every day.
Yeah, I won't say it now. I'll save it for another episode or to post in the community, but we have a really fun game that we've run with a bunch of teams related to endgame situations in particular. So cliffhanger on that. Stay Beautiful. Tuned in the community for a post about it and how to run it.
Can't wait. All right, let's go to game of the week. I'm going to share one that we called Circle Trap. And I wanted to share this one for, I guess the main reason is I feel like something has been in the water in 2025 where every team that we consult for privately, or even teams in our paid and free community, so like the thousands of coaches that we interact with on a daily basis, everybody is inquiring about how to beat a press. So the reason why I like Circle Trap is that we're simulating pressure in a way where we can teach, and it's not just havoc. So it's not block practice. it's not like full out chaos. It's a training game is what I would call this. Like, let's train our ability to play against the trap. This is why we call it circle trap. Oh, if you're watching on YouTube, we have black and orange jerseys, and they're just going to start lined up in a circle. So they're going to alternate black, orange, black, orange, black, orange. I like to play this with either six or eight players. In this situation, we have it's 4-on-4, so it's eight players, and orange is going to be on defense this entire rep, and black is going to be on offense the entire rep. Offense cannot move, so they are stationary. We're going to always have two defenders on the ball, and that's the trap. So as we get trapped, we're teaching offense how to break a trap. So some teaching points and how to break a trap, and you can see this is pretty good rep here, although I don't like that we turned our back right here, but I always taught players to break a trap by moving the trap. So use our pivots, and you can see our feet are not together. We have moved the trap, and the more the trap moves, the more it's going to weaken and create windows for us to pass through or to step through. We also want to use ball fakes, pass fakes, and maintain our vision. So this is a game that's going to give you a ton of reps against the press offensively, but defensively, it also trains your players on obviously how to trap, but also how to rotate when they're off the ball, how to hunt passes, how to read shoulders. So for instance, reading shoulders would be, where is the offensive player's shoulders facing? Let's load and rotate to take that pass away. Because a good trapping defense, if you're not on the ball, the other three players always have like a got to. They're always covering two players. So how do we know which way to rotate? We're reading the offensive player's shoulders. I've got another example here. I'm going to fast forward. This is a six-player example where we would start with just six players, and I actually unlocked the dribble for this game. I don't suggest players to catch and dribble right away against the trap because now you're dead in the trap, right? But what I wanted to illustrate with this is play against the grain. So again, for those watching, we've got a player that's going to catch the ball and dribble to their left. And what that's going to do is that's going to get the grain moving with him. Everybody's going to be flowing to the left. And then we can pick up our dribble, snap it back, and play to space. Because any good press or press attack is going to create space and attack space, create space, attack space. It's like a never-ending loop there until you arrive with an advantage or defense gets neutral and you're in the offense. I actually shared a post in our free and our paid communities about principles that beat pressure. If you're not in the community or you didn't see that one, go check it out. And I'll actually drop this recording of Circle Trap in there as well, because it's a great way to just train how to beat pressure.
Everyone needs a pressure drill. As much as we say you don't need a new drill, having them in your bag is so, so important. I love that one. And seeing people just move together, once you get that, it's such a good feeling. You just feel ready for whatever comes your way.
Agreed. Yeah. And you can always modify, like you might have a game or a drill that you could modify where you're just getting reps. I think what I've loved the most in like designing games or drills in practice is things that are continuous, where we don't have to get a trap, get it out, stop, reset. It is just continuous trapping and rotating. So a lot of reps in a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any good drill or game is going to have that. So I love that the ones you share do. They always do. Can count on Mark for gold.
All right. You want to take us through a Teach Better section this week?
I really do. I really, really do. It's simple. Because simplicity wins. Coaches, you need to listen. It sounds self-explanatory, but it's harder than it sounds. So just listening, it creates that space kind of that we were speaking to before, is not needing to fill the silence, not needing to be the loudest voice in a gym, focusing on what your players need. Being the coach that your team needs at that moment can only happen if you take a minute to listen. That then allows you to look, to observe, and really analyze what is needed next. So even just strategically, I do mean listen, but then also relationship-wise, we spoke to encouragement and accountability earlier. And if you are not listening to your players, creating a space where they can talk to you and actually feel comfortable and feel like you are hearing them, it's not going to go the way you want it to go. People want to feel heard. So on the relationship piece, the standard piece, sometimes you don't even have to take everything that they're saying and implement it. They just want a chance to say it. That might be admin, that might be parents, that might be players, it might be assistant coaches. I know I've worked in a bunch of customer service jobs. Half the time, people don't even need a particular solution or action from you. They just need to know that you care and that you have space in your schedule for them, in your day, in that moment. So listening to people first and foremost is a teach better tip. But then also having that space for you to not be speaking and just be using one of your senses at a time. I think the talking is more for us, the talking that we do. And I differentiate talking and speaking. Coach talk, just getting words out there is not for the players. It's for us. It's for the parents. It's to look like we're doing something. But if you can shift into listening, like who else is talking in the gym? Where are we lacking? What do I actually want to say? Listening and then intentionally speaking can be a game changer. And I know that's actually been a compliment that has stuck with me, one of the best I've received in my life, that I remember it to this day. And this was probably 5 years ago. A friend and a colleague said, "Claire, you don't always share what you're thinking. But that space that you hold by listening makes me really want to listen when you speak." And so you can really shift it on its head by holding back some information so that when you do provide it, it's really, really good. And you've thought it through and your players are not tuning it out. So it's helpful for you, helpful for your tactics that you're developing, and helpful for the relationships that you're building.
Yeah, really good. I'll give you two practical tips if you're a coach here to be a better listener, or at least to open the space to listen. A quote I've always liked is like, if you want great answers, ask great questions. So start asking your team questions. It could be to the whole team. It could be one-on-one conversations like you're talking about, like giving people space. And it could also be with your leaders. Ask them questions of, hey, how are we feeling today? What did we think of last night's game? What did we think of that drill that we just ran? What did we think of circle trap, right? Do you think that helped or not? So ask questions. And then last, I like the point on you don't even have to agree, right? But just giving them the space to say something. I think a good response is always like, oh, that's good. Thanks for sharing. Like, that's good. I like that. Or even if you don't, like, you don't have to say you like it if you don't, or even if you do like it, you don't have to implement it. But just knowing that, like, hey, I hear that. It's on my mind. I'll consider it. Thanks for sharing. I think that's really good. So coaches, be a better listener, says Claire. And I agree.
I know it's not end of season yet, but that's definitely the vibe in the air. I know it's a challenging time. But it is an opportune time to double down on what brings you joy, protecting your joy, to really have that steam to push you through the end of the season, whether that is successes or disappointments. It's all feedback. It's all learning. So we are here for you. Please get into the community and reach out, whether it's adversity or victory. We want to help. We are happy to help. We are here to help.
If you want ongoing support, if you want to spend more time with us, I'd encourage you to join our free community. Or if you're ready to go deeper, buy a course. Maybe you're running Lock Left or Driving Space or Racing Space based on resources that you've been able to gather. Like, now is the time to become an expert, double down on what you're doing. And the best way to do that is to invest in yourself and your program so you can be the coach that your team needs you to be on and off the floor. So thanks for spending this time with us. We appreciate you. We are Savvy Coaching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Stay savvy. Time.